Delene Braze reporting for duty. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on to your carrots, comrades. We're going to burn some high-performance health rubber. You're about to enter Delene Braze throwdown zone. Accelerating for the simple solutions, we are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to Delene Braze radio show at DeleneBraze.com. Welcome, Braze. I'm Ron Jones, and I've got Kevin Rail back on the phone with Jill Molshan from GoGlutenFreeGracefully.com, and she likes to join us and throw down a little bit. So welcome, Lean Braze. It's good to be back on the air. It's been far too long.
It has been a while.
Yes, and we've got a special show today that's close to Kevin's firing squad heart and Jill's too, and that's called Sugar-Coated Chaos.
Yes,
sir. And according to some pre-show notes that Kevin and Jill put together, I guess this is the average person, but is it the average American eats 2 pounds of sugar on a weekly basis?
Wow.
That's a lot of sugar.
That's a lot of sugar.
And you know, every time I see that, every single time I see that statistic, it blows my mind.
I think about
it weekly.
Yeah.
It absolutely blows my mind.
Really clear point we want to make today is that there are a lot of hidden sugars in things, and it's almost impossible to go to the store and buy a regular product and not have some kind of sugar in it. We've got a whole list of alternative sugar names today, and I think they might need to go to the firing squad because the Lean Braves are charging in today to do some heavy-duty work as sugar police.
Charge.
All right. Well, you know, years ago there were no artificial ingredients and no fake sugars and no preservatives, actually. And foods were basic and simple. Fruits, vegetables, seeds, nuts, berries, whole grains, a wild game. And then over the course of time, sugar and all the derivatives have become popularized and what we like to call chaotic. And now it's up to, you know, an average person eating about 2 pounds of sugar on a weekly basis. And some kids never drinking water and only drinking soda. So, Kevin, you want to start?
Yeah, I was one of those kids, as a matter of fact. Kool-Aid was my big thing.
Yeah, Kool-Aid's an interesting topic. I mean, I wonder how much. I remember my mom making that stuff, and it was red, so, you know, God knows what was in it. And just, like, you know, a third of the pitcher was sugar.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because you added the packet, so pretty much what you were adding the color
right to
the water,
yep.
And then your mom was adding all that sugar.
And little
exactly.
did we know.
Exactly. Until I was old enough to figure out how to make it on my own, then I had my own sugar, and instead of putting 4 scoops of sugar, I would put 5 scoops of sugar to make it even sweeter. So the beauty of Kool-Aid is the fact that it's loaded with artificial colors, of course, and FD red leg number 4 and 5 and 6 and whatever and all those, but then you have all the beautiful sugar to add to it as well. Needless to say, I was always wound up. Although it's been contested that my energy levels these days would lead someone to believe that I still drink Kool-Aid, but I don't. It's all natural energy now.
I believe it.
You're just fired up, throwing. You're an Avenger of Health, firing up and throwing down. And you know, so one thing about sugar, just regular sugar, is it a clean product, right? Especially if it's organic sugar. But sugar represents calories, and you know, the function of sugar is to add sweetness to foods and can make them more palatable. And then, Kevin,
right.
You had a note here that increases the bottom line for companies because people buy more and more products. That's that sugar addiction type of thing going on.
Exactly. And that you mentioned earlier about what's the purpose of it in the beginning in the first place. But, yeah, that you were saying that there's some products you wouldn't even know sugar is in it. Like, let's take bread, for example. Whoever would think that sugar would be in bread, but probably 90% of the breads out there have at least a minimal amount of sugar in there.
And oftentimes, on the label, they're not even labeling it as sugar. They're right in there as high fructose corn syrup and barley malt extract. And so people who are scanning that label looking just for sugar, that's where you really have to look for the hidden sugars.
Yeah,
exactly.
Reminds me of the packages of cereal that say they're sun-kissed or something to that effect.
That.
You know, these ambiguous kind of, if you will, the cliche sugar-coated terms, they're not coming out and saying, hey, the product's got a bunch of sugar in it, but you can damn well know that something in there like high fructose corn syrup or some sugar derivative is going to be in the product.
Well, do you remember when we were growing up that the Honey Smacks that are still on the right now? Do you remember they were called Sugar Smacks? And and then they changed the name to be Honey Smacks because they didn't want, you know, sugar on the front of the cereal box. But it was the exact same ingredients, exact same formula. They just changed the name.
It's like KFC. Used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken, and now it's KFC.
Now it's KFC.
let's let Jill take this one, and you know she's been through the whole thing with gluten and very related topic today. But what about all the effects of sugar addiction? We've got a whole bunch of things listed there, Jill.
You know, I run this. I run a program every winter. It starts usually, you know, January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, whatever that first Monday is. And it's my 45-day sugar challenge. And this year is probably the most successful year I had, you know, over 60-something people sign up for this. And, you know, one of the things that people will still keep coming back to, and I know that we just talked about calories and how it's, you know, calories in, calories out. The problem with sugar, and when you're having all these sugar calories, sugar is signaling your brain to eat the wrong foods. And that's where a lot of this addiction comes from. So when companies are jacking their products up with sugar, they're pretty much jacking it up with like metabolic cocaine and saying, you know, we're gonna mainline this stuff into your system to make you want more. And that's a lot of where the addiction comes from. So if you're gonna eat, you know, if you're gonna eat 600 calories of sugar or you're gonna eat 600 calories of protein and brown rice, yeah, calorie is a calorie, but it's a matter of what's gonna spike your blood sugar, make you want more. Besides just the addiction, it's the fluctuating blood sugar levels, which is crazy. Obesity. I mean, sugar signals your fat cells to open. This is just physiology tried and true. So a lot of the obesity right now is fat-free, but it's signaling your fat cells to open. You know, yum, yum. Let's just build it up. You know, headache. Lots of people complain about headaches, especially midday. What's the easiest way to cure a midday headache? Throw down some sugar. What's the easiest way to avoid that midday headache? Get rid of the sugar. Depression. Lots of people, link their depression to, you know, their sugar levels go down. They eat sugar. They feel great. So it's, you know, another nasty cycle. Tooth decay. I mean, come on. We all know that.
No-brainer.
Skin problems and acne. You know, people who tend to have a big high sugar diet tend to have more skin problems. And then this is, you know, really funny, the candida. So I'll find on my 45-day sugar challenge, people will be calling me in the first 3 or 4 days saying, I got to go back on sugar. My gas is so bad.
Really?
And it's the bacteria. It's that candida bacteria dying in your body, and it's got to go somewhere. So it comes out of your bowel in the form of gas.
Interesting.
So wild. I mean, I have people that are like, I can't even be going out to dinner with friends because I have the worst gas, and it does go away. It's pretty crazy. But I mean, candida is a real bacteria that will start to grow in your body, and it feeds off of sugar.
That's fascinating. This is a fascinating fart fact.
It is a fascinating fart fact. We might have to get it. Do we have any sound effects for that?
I'll have to search that one out. I wasn't prepared for that sound effect today.
And then, you know what, I'd say, you know, the top sugar-related effect is, and we all hear about it in the news, type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
Right. You know, what's interesting, over a period of time, I've kind of readjusted my palate. And so if I eat, let's say I go out to a traditional restaurant and order kind of regular food or whatever, it can taste so laden with fat. It's like I can feel the fat sliding down the back of my throat, and it just gags me. And I'm really sensitive to sugar now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, there's a place out here called the Elephant Bar Grill, whatever it is. And if I go in and get a salad there, I can't even tolerate the salad dressings. There's so much sugar in the salad dressings. It just like closes my throat off. The Elephant Bar, that's the name of the place. And so the sugar is just, and you know, people get used to that. And they're almost, like you said, addicted. The longer I'm in this with Kevin and you guys, the more I think there are some kind of chemical addiction things going on that the fast food companies are well aware of and feeding into.
Oh, absolutely.
Bro, I'm totally convinced that I call it part of the machine. they all have this, they all know, I think they sit around a table and they've developed these principles over the years, and they've figured out how to screw people over and how to get them more addicted to things and how to make their bottom line larger and their pockets fatter and make society fatter as well. And in conjunction with that, making people sick enough to re-enter money into their stream that they've created by buying pharmaceutical drugs to make them sicker, to live longer, to live extended lives. And as you are well aware of that thing called compression morbidity, well, that becomes all of a sudden smaller.
Right.
And I think it's all part of the big system.
And, you know, Kev, I totally agree with you. I totally, totally agree with you on that. But I also, I'll also add to that in saying, you know what, Ron, as your palate changes, as you're making smarter choices,
mm-hmm.
the American people's palate changes, too, in the inverse direction. So as the fast food companies are having to add, you know, just this amount of sugar or this amount of salt or this amount of fat to their product, to keep people coming back for more, they have to keep adding more of that stuff to change, to keep up with their changing palate.
God, it's like we're a bunch of crackheads.
Yeah.
I know.
We need to take some things to the firing squad. Namely,
well, what I think what you, I mean, what, one of the easiest things to do is just take this stuff out. Take it out of your diet. Oh.
Yeah. God forbid we should do that.
All right. Well, fake sugars. So, you know, people, they think that, okay, the sugar's bad, so I'll eat the fake sugar, and then that's not so bad, and then they end up getting duped, so not so fast, from what Kevin wrote down here in our show notes. Fake sugars are marketed as sugar substitutes. This is sugar coating by manufacturers without local sugar being involved. And, Kevin, I'll let you take the rest of it because this is a favorite topic of yours.
Everything always comes down to inconclusive evidence by these manufacturers and these professionals and these experts. But you know what? I don't buy it. Seriously, it's common sense. Just think about it for a second. Something fake is not natural. Something that's not natural goes against the Lean-Bray Code of Ethics. That is grounds for it to take a trip out to the firing squad and be dealt with accordingly. Now, Jill, I'm going to hand the floor over to you because you had a little something you wanted to interject about this, about the like how fake sugars first came to being.
Well, fake sugars in so I've read this in quite a few different places now. I'm merely going to reiterate what I've read in quite a few different places. Whether or not this is true, I definitely believe it. Back in the Vietnam days, they were trying to figure out a compound for chemical warfare. And wouldn't you know, they came up with the first type aspartame. And when they realized that to go ahead and douse a whole country in this chemical warfare was just, I mean, it was just inhumane. They decided they needed to destroy all of this chemical warfare. Some of the product came into the outside of this metal, this, you know, huge metal canister that it was kept in one of these facilities, and somebody ended up tasting it, and it was super, super sweet. They were like, wait a minute, this is wild. And so as they started to do the testing on it, the formula from that chemical warfare went into becoming our first aspartame. So if you trace it back as to when the fake sugars started to come onto the market, and it was right after the Vietnam days, it's pretty wild to see the correlation there. And I mean, just look at it. I love the stage name for aspartame. It's C14H1N205. Okay, why are you putting that in your body? Like, I mean, it's just crazy to think of the chemical compound that has to make it up. And it's methanol, aspartic acid, and phenylalanine. These are all products that are derivatives of formaldehyde, gasoline. Mm-hmm. It's flammable. They make paint strippers out of it. They make carburetor cleaners out of it. And hey, this is the type of thing that they're putting in products to create that fake sugar.
Can we get that on organic?
You know what, Ron? You might have a whole product on your hands there. You might have $1 million industry. And you know what? They're all just their excitotoxins. It's Anyway, Kevin, I know you have a lot to say about these fake sugars too, but there's a little history.
That is dead. That whole story Jill just said is right on the money. First of all, very well spoken, I might add, Jill. Secondly,
thank you.
There's actually a silver lining to the problem with this aspartame that you just mentioned. The morticians are not having to use so much embalming fluid on people these days, so they're saving money. Because their bodies are so well preserved from eating all this crap, aspartame especially.
It's like drinking lacquer thinner, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, basically. You're preserving your body from the inside out. So when you die, which you probably will have a quicker death if you eat aspartame on a daily basis, you're not going to need as much embalming fluids for your body to keep it preserved.
And one of the scariest things about the aspartame and these fake sugars, too, is that we're ingesting them. So we're going into our mouth, which is a single cell. I mean, the skin within your mouth, or if we're going to call it skin, is just a single cell. And it is so fast that crosses into your blood barrier. That's where a lot of these addictions come from, too. The fake sugar addiction is oftentimes worse than the regular sugar addiction because it stimulates your brain so fast.
And my man on the street input here is that, you know, a lot of people will argue about the research to support or deny or whatever, and I think I keep coming back to what I've learned from Kevin. If it's chemical, it probably doesn't belong in your body. You just got to go back to the very basics right here, and it's made in a laboratory. So if you're going to eat sugar, just eat sugar. But, you know, don't eat it in moderation or, you know, a very small amount. And once in a while, you know, that's okay, I suppose. But not, you know, not to switch over and then just start dumping all these chemicals in your food and thinking that that's the solution. But there are many. We've got the NutraSweet, the Splenda, the Ace K, the Sweet and Low. And then, you know, Kevin made a note here that a lot of it comes from GMO corn, so that's a whole other issue with the high fructose corn syrup and GMO farming.
Well, I'd like to add a little more on the common names thing there. You're going to see, again, we go back to point A, which is always consult with your ingredient label when you're looking at a product. And I also have to backtrack even further. And Ron, you mentioned something about addictions and stuff, and I'm going to give you a simple addiction, and that's Diet Coke. How many people do you know that drink, like, gallons of this a day?
Gallon.
I think they're doing safe things because, oh, it's calorie-free and blah, blah, blah. It's just the other thing. Yeah, but it's also got aspartame in it. And you're actually addicted to it, period.
There's nothing good in a diet soda. Nothing good for you in a diet. I saw an obese woman the other day drinking a Diet Coke, and it's like, okay, you know, this is a...
And one of the worst things, too, is that it actually, I mean, they're showing so many more studies now saying that having the fake sugars in your diet makes you crave actual sugar. So your brain's not getting the sugar payoff, so it's saying, you know what, now we need to eat a candy bar. So it's a Diet Coke and a Snickers bar, you know, a Diet Coke and a bowl of ice cream.
And there are a lot of other side effects. You know, you've got a bad aftertaste, which is your body's way of telling you that you're probably consuming something that's bonk, right? Upset stomach, skin irritation, brain tumors, addiction. We have a note here that fake sugars are basically neurotoxins. They're highly addictive neurotoxins. And like Jill said, it makes the brain crave actual sweets because the fakes don't give the payoff.
I'm tried and true on that one. So I gave up gum. Probably in November.
That was a question.
I think I mentioned this on the last show too. It was actually the hardest thing I've ever had to give up in my life. And I have an extremely clean diet, and I figured that was the last thing to come out of my diet. Mm-hmm. I've never been so cyclically depressed throughout the day, you know, and I just let it pass like any other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the hardest addiction I've ever had to give up.
Now, I asked Kevin about gum last year, and you know, we talked about some like healthy options at Whole Foods. They have some stuff up there that
like the Xylitew and
is that kind of stuff cool?
Right.
Or?
And you know what though, I think those are great products, mm-hmm. but I don't want them. When I was giving up the gum, the mm-hmm. actual sweetened gum, you could have handed me a piece of Bubblicious with sugar in it. I didn't want it. I wanted a slice of Orbitz, or I wanted extra. I would actually crave that. I would crave that. And when I realized that I wasn't craving just gum, I was craving the aspartame. It was really scary.
You know what's interesting? Historically, I've chewed when I chew gum. The Wrigley's Double Mint. And I noticed a couple of years ago, they changed the packaging a little bit, which, you know, I didn't really like the new packaging, but it tasted different. And I'm like, those bastards, you know, they had to switch from a regular sugar to some kind of artificial sugar because it was sweet, but it was obviously different, you know?
Yeah.
And then I started thinking more about it and talking to Kevin, and I had to send it to the firing squad. Because It was, I could tell in my mouth that it was fake. It wasn't just regular sugar anymore.
Yeah, when you first start inducting those products into your system, you just know something isn't quite right. And then after
it's
you do
palate.
It, after you have it progressively for a couple weeks or a month, your body gets used to it, like Jill said, and then she was a major addict, and I remember her chomping gum every time, you know, on a daily basis.
15 to 20 sticks a day.
Wow.
How many?
15 to 20 sticks a day.
That's a lot of gum. Woo.
I mean, expensive too, but that's a lot of gum.
That's major.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
And so these fake sugars are in all kinds of products, not just gum, like we've been talking about, but the hard candy, the regular candy, cupcakes, cookies, ice cream, diet soda, diet tea, energy bars, protein powders, meal replacement drinks, candy bars, and Kevin's favorite, yogurt that claims 50% less sugar. And I think that's a cause for a little firing squad action. Because anytime there's a yogurt issue, Kevin's all over that. Right?
We had to dismantle a couple containers of yogurt last summer out in Cali.
That's right.
Because of that same reason, because I found not only high fructose corn syrup but aspartame in two different products, so I had to stack them up and do what I needed to do.
So
before we move along, I have to backtrack just slightly because I want to make sure you people understand there's more to fake sugars than just aspartame. I want to give you exact names here for you to look for when you're scouring around for products. And I want you to make sure that you know when you're being bullshitted by people. So aspartame is one, but you may see it called NutraSweet. You've heard of NutraSweet, right, RJ?
Yep,
Jill?
I've seen it many times.
Okay.
Well, that's been around for decades. It's one of the first ones that came out as aspartame. Sucralose is also packaged as Splenda. This wonderful, beautiful word, Splenda. It's got a nice, pretty yellow box. You'll see it in grocery stores. Absolute garbage. Crap. Aspartame potassium, as RJ said, ACE-K. ACE-K is usually, that's an abbreviation. You're either going to see the word aspartame potassium or you're going to see ACE-K on a label.
ACE-K just sounds like a drug, doesn't it? It sounds like something you'd have to buy in a back alley.
Yes, exactly.
Some kind of crack cocaine derivative, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. God's sakes. Saccharin, which is synonymous with sweet and low. Usually if you go to like a diner, like a truck stop or trucker stop all the time, you'll see this little glass square-shaped container in the middle of the table, and you're going to see three or four different types of sugar. There'll be real sugar, there'll be cane sugar in like a brown thing, and then you're going to see either Splenda or Sweet and Low or both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet and Low is saccharin.
And
saccharin is another one of those early sugars, early fake sugars that was made back in the late 70s, early 80s. That's when it first started.
Tab.
That's right.
Tab. Do you remember Tab soda? That was all saccharin.
Oh, God, awful stuff. Terrible. Tasted terrible. What was that, RJ?
Well, one point I want to make before we forget is, and this is a major underscoring point to everyone listening, any beverage claiming zero or any beverage with flavor but little or no calorie juices is going to have this fake sugar in it. Okay, so don't be duped and buffaloed and bullshit like Kevin was saying.
Yeah, oftentimes those beverages have a color with them, too. And that's a quick indicator that it's crap. And then it's got a color, then it's also got artificial colors as well.
Right.
I was mortified to see that Tropicana's even jumping on the bandwagon now, too. They're doing their juices that are claiming to be 50% less sugar.
Hmm.
Yep.
No, so 50% less sugar, but 50% more fake sugar? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, there you
pretty
go.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much it. And then I think we had a Lean Beret radio show would not be complete without us addressing high fructose corn syrup again.
Yes.
Because we can't say it enough times.
Yeah.
High fructose corn syrup is going to be a sweetener in a lot of products, and it's different than a fake sugar. It's an actual sugar. But again, don't be fooled by the idea that it's natural, because there's nothing even close to natural about it. High fructose corn syrup comes from corn that is raised genetically modified. And if you remember in the past, genetically modifying is going against Mother Nature. It's injecting seeds with a serum to make them repel pests and stuff like that. So as they grow as plants, they can be hit with Roundup, which is a weed killer, and the plants are going to be voluptuous and create a high volume. But what kind of effect does this have on the human body? A very bad one, period. There's no two ways around it. If you like eating Roundup and weed killer, just go out and buy some, sprinkle it all over your food and eat it. Be my guest.
Probably tastes sweet,
too.
Don't.
What's that?
It probably tastes sweet, too.
I bet it does.
Probably. And I don't doubt it.
And on a side note, because it's something that we're getting ready to do, there's a documentary out. I've been talking to Kevin about it called The Vanishing Bees. And we're actually going to sponsor a couple of showings of this through the Lean Berets. And one of the points made in the documentary about why the bees are vanishing, and it kind of reminds me of what Jill was talking about with the fake sugar origins in the war in Vietnam. The pesticides originally came about in the First World War as a way to kill people. Then after the war was over, all these scientists, these chemical scientists, needed something to do. And so they directed basically the same chemicals into putting it on our food to kill bugs instead of people. But that's the origin of pesticides, which I thought was interesting. But one of the things they do, because the bees are vanishing, they're shipping bees back and forth a lot more than they used to try to make up for hives that are missing, and people need bees, you know, for the pollination. And when the bees are in shipment, which is very unnatural, by the way, right?
Yeah.
They're on a truck or a ship or a plane going somewhere. They have to eat. They can't forage on their own because obviously they're enclosed. Guess what they're feeding them?
Corn.
High fructose corn syrup.
Really?
Yeah, they're sugar derivative stuff. So, and what the documentary pointed out so well is that this is like feeding junk food to your children. And basically, this is part of the reason the bees' central nervous system has been trashed, and they're just freaking out and leaving their young and the queen bee and vanishing. But the real issue is that they put the pesticides in the ground, and that slower release pesticide has more of a neurotoxin effect on the bees, and it's causing them to freak out. But anyway, I just had to mention that.
You know, we've mentioned the word neurotoxin a few times.
Yes.
And for people out there that don't necessarily know what a neurotoxin is, neuro is your brain and all of your nerves and all of your spinal cord. And so a neurotoxin is something that goes in and really just it excites the brain and then gives it a toxic burst.
Mm-hmm.
And the brain being really our center thought for everything and all of our muscle function and thought process. I mean, the amount of neurotoxin that is being pumped into our food right now is just, it's frightening.
I just thought of something. I never thought of this before until Jill mentioned it, you guys. But, you know, you look at kids today and a lot of them are very uncoordinated. You know, I've always attributed that to, you know, they're sitting around not moving, so they don't develop those motor programming skills and neurological controls that, you know, we grew up getting because we're out running around and being crazy. But I wonder if it's some kind of neurotoxin type effect from all the poor foods they're eating too. Just from a control aspect, the brain isn't functioning as well, so therefore if the master control isn't working, you're not going to have output, which is coordinated movement, right, with agility.
Yeah.
Just something to think about.
I think that's a great thing to think about, but you could even trace it back one step further too and saying, you know, as generations go on and we're breeding so many generations that have low vitamin and mineral density due to poor diets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not even getting it from the beginning when they're being created, you know, with you know, in their DNA. You know, it may just be one of those things that's going to get lost over the generations.
This is like Kevin got me to realize last year. He goes, you know, the pesticides are in the seed.
Exactly.
And the fruit, as it develops, you can't wash it off. Well, you know, this chemical neurotoxin BS is in our cell DNA now, you know. It's getting fairly serious. Well, moving ahead, there's some natural alternatives, and I get a lot of questions about this doing corporate wellness, Kevin, and we want to definitely share some of the what appears to be healthy alternatives to regular sugar or these fake chemically derived sugars in a laboratory. So you want to hit on that a little bit?
Certainly. The number one sugar alternative that I like and I turn to and I recommend to people is pronounced either one of two ways, stevia or stevia. You're going to hear it one of two ways. Dr. Oz, I don't know how the hell he pronounces it, but
I call it stevia.
Anyway, it's derived from a plant. I used to have it in my organic garden back in the year of 2006 with some of my friends.
It's a chrysanthemum.
I used to break
plant.
A leaf on.
Really?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, it tastes great. When you just chomp on the leaves, it's really good. I actually used to take the leaves, chop it up, and put it in my salad, believe it or not. It added a very nice little flair to it.
Hmm.
Stevia is among one of my favorites, and it comes in powdered form, it comes in liquid form, and it comes in individual packets, or it comes in like a big container. You can get it at your local health food stores. Another one is called Lohan Guo. Another one is xylitol, which Jill mentioned xylitol before, which is a gum. Xylitol is a extract from a tree bark, I believe, and it has very sweet properties. It's a sweetener for a lot of natural gums, candy bars, etc., and it can also be found in powder form as well. Date sugar is another one. Agave syrup is one of my favorites, and it comes from cactus.
Yum.
It's a good one. It looks kind of like honey, tastes kind of like honey, but it's not quite as thick.
And it doesn't spike your blood sugar like a lot of honey will spike your blood sugar. Agave tends to have more of a slow release sugar reaction.
Stabilization.
It reminds me of a tequila drinking story from back in the day, but we'll move forward.
Oh, all right, there's this stuff that kind of has a resemblance to molasses called Yacone syrup. Have you guys ever heard of that?
I've never heard of that one.
I've never heard of it either, Kevin, so please tell us a little bit about it.
Yacone syrup is very sweet. It's dark. It kind of looks like molasses, but it's a little more runny, and it comes from a root, I believe. And the good thing about it is it does not spike your blood sugar levels. Most of these sweeteners that I'm mentioning do not have the same blood sugar spiking effect of a regular sugar, which is always a plus. Then you have maple syrup and maple sugar and honey, which are all natural as well. Honey has a little bit more of a spiking effect, like Jill said, but maple sugar and maple syrup do not.
You know, there are a lot of health benefits in maple syrup. My brother's big on that, and in fact, some research came out the last few months about it's actually healthier than people thought in terms of different properties. Just a side note on that.
Antibacterial properties, which is really great. Okay. The first three that Kevin mentioned, the stevia, and then pronounce the second one, Kev.
Lohanguo.
And xylitol are calorie free, which is which is great. And stevia has been used by, you know, some ancient Indian tribes for years and years and years, not just to sweeten things, but as a digestive aid. So it's supposed to be really, really good to soothe any sort of upset stomach, or to just have something with stevia in it afterwards, or to chew on the leaves to just help promote the digestion of the food you've already eaten.
I never heard that, so that's a good note. And we'll take all this and put it into a handout on the website, too, so that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so there's natural alternatives. There are some out there. You can probably find those pretty easy now, maybe not even by going to someplace like Whole Foods or another health food store. They might even be on a regular shelf now at this point. I know we've heard a lot about stevia lately. So,
yes, there are some stevia products out there, but maple syrup, maple sugar are probably your best bet to find in a conventional grocery store. And most grocery stores are trying to make bank now on the whole organic movement. So they have dedicated sections in the stores with organic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I would scour around those areas and look for any one of these products. But be cautious of them doing price hiking on you. Always try to go to a local mom-and-pop type, independently owned health food store first.
Right.
Because the conventional grocery stores are going to stock you with prices.
Some dupage going on there. And this kind of reminds me of what Jill said about the gum, though. Now she's kind of gotten over it. She has no craving for it. I don't really have a craving for any artificial sweetener because I don't have a taste for it anymore, you know. If I eat a cookie, you know, I enjoy the chocolate chip cookie that my wife will make, but I don't add sugar in anything anymore. In fact, when I had my apartment before the family moved back out to California, people would come and visit, and they'd be looking through my cupboards for sugar. I had none, you know. I get these weird looks like I needed to go to the firing squad, you know. It's like I just don't crave it at all, you know.
If it's gone from your diet, it's amazing how your body just starts to release it, and you do open up the physiological pathway to crave the food your body needs at that time. And, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do it? How am I going to do it? How am I going to do it? You just want me to give up sugar? I will always challenge people to go 72 hours. 72. That's it. You're going 3 days. See what it feels like to give up sugar for 3 days and welcome all of those issues that are going to be associated with it. You know, welcome the depression, welcome the headache. You know, just try and see what sugar feels like in your body.
Even
the candida bacteria burst.
It's part of the process,
you know,
man.
These are real physiological things that sugar will do, but after 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, your body's going to stop craving it. Just amazing.
And, you know, there are a lot of different types of names given for sugar, and a lot of this is just a Buffalo and BS people. And I wanted to kind of touch on this a little bit, Kevin. But you know, I've got a list here of dozens. I'll just read a few. You know, beet sugar, buttered syrup, cane crystals, cane juice crystals, caramel, evaporated cane juice, Florida crystals, sorghum syrup, yellow sugar. That raises some concern with me. And then you have the obvious, or should be obvious at this point, the high fructose corn syrup. A lot of things that end in the OSE type thing. You guys want to tap into some of that?
Well, lactose is naturally occurring, but that's why when you flip over a milk container, it's like, wait a minute, why are there so many sugar grams in one serving of milk? And those are the naturally occurring sugars.
Mm-hmm.
And lactose, basically defined in the medical terms, is milk sugar. Period.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is, and it doesn't have much of a sweet taste to it, but it still has the same kind of effect that a normal sugar would.
Right.
And fructose. I mean, if you're going to go lactose, which is milk sugar, fructose is fruit sugar.
Mm-hmm. Glucose, fructose, yeah. Dextrose.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different types of sugars, but, you know, there are some naturally occurring sugars. Obviously, you eat a piece of fruit, it's going to have fructose in it. But there are a lot of things added in now, and it's just amazing when you do the Kevin Rail, flip the label over, start reading things that you can't pronounce, and you break those down, how many sugar additives are in food today. And it just snuck in on us, man. It's like people have, you know, they're kind of clueless about what they're actually taking in with sugars and fats these days. And obviously, it shows in our belt line.
Oh, absolutely. Would you guys agree that probably, like, one of the most common hidden sugars you'll see in foods nowadays is maltodextrin?
Yes.
It just seems like it's showing up on more like things that you wouldn't even imagine they would be.
Yeah, that's the high power stuff we use in ultra endurance racing, you know. So it's like running jet fuel in your body all the time, though. Most people don't need that, you know.
Yeah.
Maltodextrin is a derivative from corn, potato, or rice starch, and it is the best time to take it is a post-workout. And I'm not talking about a walk in the park. I'm talking about a 60 to 90-minute high-intensity activity, such as endurance racing, as RJ was saying. And it quickly puts back stored glycogen that your body used for energy during your workout bout. So if you see maltodextrin in a product, then there's no reason for that to be in your body unless you're, you know, doing high-intensity exercise.
So our next section here is the buzzwords of the day, glycemic index. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, what is that, the quick sugars, simple sugars versus the whole grains. And Kevin, you want to launch into that a little bit? And then I know Jill's going to have some really good input on this because now we're getting into grains, and she's the gluten goddess.
Absolutely. So the glycemic index, you often hear it on the news, you read it in the papers, you hear Dr. Oz talk about it, you hear Oprah Winfrey talk about it, everybody and their brother. You may even hear your priest talk about it in church on Sunday. I don't know. Basically, it's the rate at which a carbohydrate causes your blood sugar levels to rise when you eat a carb. Now, sugar is a carbohydrate, and it causes a fast spike in blood sugar levels. This, in turn, sets off a chain reaction which causes your pancreas to pump out bucket loads of insulin to stabilize your blood sugar levels. Insulin is a fat storage hormone, which spells disaster for your hips, butt, belly, and sides, and back, and every other part of your body. Natural alternatives have a low GI reading, the ones that I mentioned earlier, except for honey. That's kind of still high in the glycemic index. So refined carbs in the form of white flour products, like bread, cakes, cookies, donuts, etc., all have a high glycemic index, and they need to be avoided. If they're not avoided, they need to be eaten in moderation, which I know is RJ's favorite word of the day.
So the natural natural alternative sugars that we mentioned, like stevia and the agave and stuff like that, they're lower on the glycemic index, with the exception of honey, you're saying.
Yes.
That's an important point for people to make if they have issues with that.
It's a very important point for those that have already have blood sugar issues pre-existing, such as hypoglycemia or diabetes, etc.
And
like my mom, for example, is pre-diabetic. And she's on a small dose of metformin, which makes me so angry I just want to pound my head against the wall. She won't listen to me about exercise and diet, but what are we going to do?
I need to come out and work with your mom. I could say the same thing. I could say the same thing, and she'd be like, "Hey, do you know what RJ said?"
Exactly.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
I could quote you. She's like, "Wow, RJ's great."
RJ said to do do this, so I'm going to start doing this now.
Oh, it is the truth. My husband came back from the gym the other day, and he must have picked up a magazine, and he said, do you know that weight training is one of the easiest ways for men to burn fat? I'm like, really? Who said that? Who said that? No way. I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to touch this one.
That is too funny. So anyway,
that's the thing.
I want to elaborate quickly again on the glycemic index. If you continually eat foods that are high in the glycemic index, you notice some people, as they age, they get into their 60s or 70s, they develop diabetes.
Right.
This is a big reason why, right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because of eating high glycemic carbs their whole life, pounding their system day in and day out with white bread and refined cereals and all these kind of crappy-ass foods and bagels and stuff, the pancreas starts flipping you the bird and saying no. The pancreas folds its arms and says, no, I'm not releasing insulin anymore. I'm sick of this. And they get tired of pounding out buckloads of insulin every day, so they don't distribute it as readily available as they should. That's when you start to develop diabetes. And that can happen that's happening at a younger and younger age these days.
Oh, even before kids get into high school now.
Yeah, staggering.
We used to see it 60, 70 years old. Now we're seeing it at 6 to 8, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are some people that are a little more sensitive to sugars than others. I know with some, they can have a reactive hypoglycemia. If they eat something with a high glycemic index, their blood sugar just like crashes right away and they get real funky. And some people aren't as reactive to that. But in general, I think the point we want to make is that, you know, these real simple explosive type sugars are generally refined and they're bogus and, you know, they're just not healthy in general. So
there are some. So the glycemic index, I think, got its claim to fame, where most people have probably heard that term, was through the Atkins diet.
Yeah.
Because that's the foundation of the Atkins diet is pulling out all the foods with the high glycemic index. But Kevin and I had this conversation just the other day in regards to the fact that those Atkins diets will tell you to avoid things like sweet potatoes and bananas, raisins and carrots and all these wonderful, wonderful foods that tend to get a bad rap because they are high on the glycemic index.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like you have to pick your battles. But if you're gonna eat a Snickers bar with no nutrients over a banana because you're playing the glycemic game, I mean, really, do the research, guys. It's a whole food. It's a banana. You know, avoiding the high glycemic index. Now, I'm not telling you to make a bowl of something and call it a salad, and you're chopping up carrots, bananas, sweet potatoes, and watermelon. But you know, using those foods for what they're used for, which is energy. At 4 o'clock, I mean, I'm the same as a lot of other people. At 4 o'clock, my body starts to signal me that it's time for a little pick-me-up.
Mm-hmm.
That is the time where I'll have half of a sweet potato. I'll tell you, that will carry me straight over till dinner, or a banana. But I run into people all the time who are like, you eat bananas for breakfast? Do you know how high in sugar they are? Yeah, but do you know how high in potassium they are too?
Yeah.
So high glycemic, like high GI refined foods, bad, bad, bad.
So that's what we need to tease out then, and that's a really good clarification. So it's not the high GI in general. It's high GI index foods that are refined.
Yeah.
Not natural. So we go back to the whole lean bray second grade mentality stuff, right? Real food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just real food, right? Organic.
Real food, real results.
Yeah,
anything,
so
basically just think to yourself, does it come from a tree, plant, vine, or shrub?
Mm-hmm.
If it does, the chances are it's good for you. A Snickers bar doesn't come from a tree, vine, plant, or shrub, I hate to tell you. Although it's 52 on a glycemic index or maybe or something like that, it's still absolute bullshit from front to back,
yeah,
any way you look at it. A banana and an apple are both natural. Speaking of which, they each have, a banana has 3 grams of fiber, an apple has 4 grams of fiber. So, fiber helps slow down the absorption of a carbohydrate. I would also like to add that, which further helps keep your blood sugar level stable and further prevents a fast spike in blood sugar, in insulin release, I should say.
And a great thing to do to slow down that insulin release, like when eating a banana, have a few almonds with it. Have something with a high fat content, high good fat content. and some protein. And it will take that high GI banana and make it so you're not hungry in a couple hours. It's really going to help sustain you.
Yeah, I'll put some pecans on my cereal in the morning if I have a banana or some raisins and stuff like that. So I'll always get a little protein in there too.
Another easy, quick method of stabilizing the banana is by slathering some almond butter across the top, or my favorite, sunflower seed butter.
Hmm.
And that's a quick, easy, simple, delicious snack, and it's balanced. Delicious.
So, in closing, we went over some good stuff. I mean, people kind of like things that are a little bit sweet, and we're going to try to stick to the natural versions, because anything made in a laboratory that has a big, long chemical name probably isn't good to be putting in your body. There are some wonderful natural alternatives that we'll have listed in the handout. We went over that. And on the glycemic index, if it's high, it needs to be a natural food and not something refined. And I'm going to let Jill kind of take this, the amount of time recommended to reset the palate. I mean, it will happen, but you want to take those closing comments? And
it will happen. I mean, sugar craving will go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of getting ahead of it and knowing how it's wired, just being smarter than your sugar craving. If you act on it, it's just going to keep coming back. It's going to be a vicious circle. However, if you want to get ahead of it and you want to get behind the psychology of it because you have a sugar problem like most people do. I mean, it's not abnormal to have a sugar problem. It's a huge problem going on right now. Get ahead of it and think about it. It's going to be about 3 to 5 days before you feel some really, really good effects of letting the sugar go away. Some simple tips when you do have that sugar craving: walk away. Take some deep breaths. Give it 5 minutes. The sugar craving will go away. Most likely, it's going to come back. But knowing that if you give it 5 minutes, it will go away. Take a walk. Throw in a load of laundry. Pick up the phone and call somebody that you haven't called in a while. Just do something to get your mind off of it for the next 5 minutes. And, I'll also encourage people to figure out when are your sugar cravings the worst, what time of day are they the worst, and be ready for them. Be ready for them and put your own strong psychology first. Also, not just what time of day are they the most prevalent, but what are you doing? Do you associate it with, like I have a lady who loves to drink wine in the bathtub. And she's trying to cut the wine out of her diet. Well, guess what? Just stop drinking wine in the bathtub. When else do you like to eat sugar? Is it always, is it always when you go to the movies? Okay, well, know that and be prepared. It's just a matter of being prepared. Freezing some grapes, throw a bag of frozen grapes in the freezer and grab a few of those when you have a sugar craving. It is possible to get in front of the craving, but just knowing how highly addictive it is really the first step.
Yep. And if you don't think you have a sugar problem, you need to do the Kevin Rayl label reading, and you might discover that you actually are ingesting a lot of sugars and a lot of fake sugars, which are even worse.
I have a quick story for us. So on my 45-day sugar challenge this year, I had a gal who called me in tears. She was sitting in the parking lot of her office, and it was the second week into the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
She was struggling. I mean, she was having a hard, hard time because she had just had her second baby, and to stay awake during the days and to, stay on her game,
mm-hmm.
she had developed quite a sugar habit. Well, wouldn't you know it, unfortunately, her baby was, they couldn't get the baby to sleep. I mean, he was maybe sleeping about 2 hours a night, and this was, in 15-minute increments.
Wow.
Which is harder for her, so then she's eating more sugar to stay awake during the day, going to work. Well, she was also breastfeeding, and she cut the sugar out, and after 2 weeks, the baby started to sleep.
Really?
She called me bawling from the parking lot of her office because she realized her child wasn't having trouble sleeping from anything other than the physiological sugar he was ingesting from mother's milk.
That's fascinating.
And he was as addicted to sugar as she was.
Oh, my God.
Sad. I mean, just sad. And when she realized what she was doing, it just, beat her up.
Hmm. Interesting.
Wow.
That's a...
My friend Jessica was just going through the same spiel with her baby son as well a while back. She had to be meticulous about what she was eating and ingesting because of the breast milk thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of goes back to what RJ was saying, what I've been telling him for a while, is when you plant a seed in the ground, that where the ground is impregnated with garbage and fertilizers and such, and then you spray it as it grows up as a tree and then bears fruit, the fruit's going to be contaminated one way or the other. So that's a kind of a similar situation.
A fabulous analogy, Kevin.
Well, yeah. And an example at home is my parents bought Ronnie a fruit tree. We planted it out in the backyard, and you know, we've got a gardener here who comes by, and they do the gardener thing, and every once in a while, I notice there's some pellets in the ground. I realize, you know, the gardener's going to have to go to the firing squad because it's contaminating the fruit tree, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell he's putting on there, and I'm not going to get into a whole debate with him about, you know, the whole organic, you know, seed stuff. So I'm just going to have to fertilize my own lawn and get some organic type of stuff to put on there, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been a really good show. I hope people get something out of it and give yourself a little time to readjust that palate, and you might feel a lot better. So, got anything to add, Kevin, before we sign off?
No, just be meticulous of you know, your ingredient labels, and be aware that sugar, if it gets, it can get the best of you. And I know so many people that fall into that category, regular sugar and fake sugar both. Just use both in moderation. You don't have to be scared to death of sugar and, oh, my God, it's a horrible, horrendous thing. Just watch what you're eating. Be aware of what you're taking in. Watch your overall calories and make sure to exercise every single day of the week. Because if you don't, I will find you.
If you had that weak moment, just give K-Rail a call. He'll take whatever sugar product you're looking at to the firing squad.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot. This has been Kevin Rail and Ron Jones of Lean Berets. We've had Jill Molshan on again today, who's joining us on a regular basis. And you can check her website out at goglutenfreegracefully.com. And we're all fitness people. We love to throw down. And thanks for listening.
Later.
You've been listening to the Lean Berets radio show at theleanberets.com. Music today provided by Hot Rod Walt and the Psycho DeVilles. Until next time, keep your foot in the accelerator for health and rock on. I know you gotta dig that new tattoo. To blame a rolling dice or a lucky horseshoe. You gotta dig